When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Here we are again, part two of this week's AJ Ngannou Fight Week extravaganza. Live shows at 8 o'clock every single night of the week. Thank you very much if you joined us last night. We are back tonight for another one. And tonight we're going to focus on the other guy. That's right, last night we did Anthony Joshua. Tonight we are doing Francis Le Predateur Ngannou. But I know what you're thinking. If you tuned into the show last night, you're thinking to yourself, is he switched on? Has he got his gear sorted? Hello, Nick.
Oh, dear. It's the old ones and the best ones. Hey. Yes, I'm all sorted tonight. All sorted. Classic. Phone on silent. All that gear.
Classic. If you didn't watch us last night, listen, it's still available on our YouTube channel. You can go and check that out. We concentrated mainly on Anthony Joshua. We talked about some of the stuff that's going on in the world of boxing as well. A little bit of review from the weekend's action involving Sam Eggington and Ray Ford's fantastic comeback against Dodzhebek Kolmatov. But tonight we're going to concentrate on Francis Ngannou. Ask loads of different questions about Francis. Obviously, I'm sure you're fully aware that we've been covering the UFC for a long period of time, so therefore we've been all over Francis's MMA career and his fledgling boxing career. We'll get stuck into that. We might also talk about some of the other big boxing stories that are currently going around. I know that last night we said we'd talk a little bit about Haney and Garcia. Might bring it up in tonight's show. And we might talk about the Dillian White situation as well come the end. But this is fully interactive. You can get involved with the program as much as you want. Comments are open. So get yourself stuck on in. I can see that they're already coming in. So thank you very much for that already. Just to prove that we are live. What have we got here? This is a good one, actually. This actually reminds me very much of you, and I do actually think of you every time I'm talking about this guy. Adam, do you ever struggle on TalkSport not to say Uncle Turkey? Nick gets me every time when he says it. Yeah, he does, right? I let him go off on one. I let him do his thing. It's Nick's thing. It's not my thing. It's Nick's thing. So I refrain when I am in... in fact, I don't even say it on here. I refer to him by his full name. You've got a more affectionate name for him, so I'll let you keep that, mate. And if you've got any thoughts on this fight at the weekend, just ping them in. I'll keep an eye out on the comment section, and we will get you hopefully fully integrated in the show. Tomorrow, by the way, we are doing a show which involves you. So if you want to be on camera, if you want to say your piece so other people can see you and interact with us, let us know via social media. Get in contact with us. Send us a message, and we will get you hooked up with tomorrow night's live show. Again, at 8 o'clock. Got to be available at 8 o'clock to do it live. And then on Thursday, we'll have a big wrap-up where we'll have a look at everything that's happened throughout the course of the week. And then we'll try and make some fight predictions. Sound all right to you, mate?
I might have a special guest or two lined up to drop in amongst the fight disciples tomorrow night as well. So definitely worth tuning in, even if you're not going to be involved in the show, because there might be a special guest or two. But as always, whether it's tomorrow or especially tonight, any questions, bang them in there now. We'll try our best to jump on any of them. But loads to talk about, because Francis Ngannou is not your average human being. The man is a career lifetime champion. And his journey's been well documented now, not just by MMA websites, but by a lot of boxing websites over the last 6 months and everything else. People know where he started and where his dream was to be. And his dream, when he was working in that sand mine in Cameroon, long before fleeing the continent for Europe and spending months in a Spanish jail before finally getting to Paris and living in a NCP car park, long before all that, his dream was to become a heavyweight boxing champion. And once again, this weekend, he gets a massive opportunity to take a step in the right direction of fulfilling that dream.
Joseph, I've just been thinking about something the first time that I met Francis Ngannou. That story that you're referring to there, yeah? And this, I'm going to blow my own trumpet here, because I'm sure that I am the first person that interviewed him about his life story. But on the same day, I think he did Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan had his published before we did ours on BT at the time, which is now TNT. And it went worldwide. And obviously everybody learnt about this sensational story of adversity from the Cameroonian sand mines. I've got a clip from that first day that I spent with Francis Ngannou. Do you want to see it? Because
was this footage from the first time you met him?
I thought
this was done at the PI like years later.
No. This it's at the PI. The first time I met him properly was at the PI.
Okay.
All right. But
was he tender by then? His story was I'd well been told by then, dude. His story was told three or four months into his career.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't out there public.
I don't know. You know, I think it was.
Don't go on Google now and start researching it. This is from a time. This is right at the start. This is way before he was fighting for titles when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a lot of people are obviously wondering how well and the reasons why as to why Francis Ngannou has adapted so well to fight sports in general, and obviously made that transition over to boxing. It is because of the elite sparring partners and work that he does get behind the scenes. And this is a little clip from a moment on the mats where we're having a little bit of sparring. We only caught the back end of this particular spar with one of his elite sparring partners. And it's quite obvious.
It's taken 6 minutes and 30 seconds for you to pull this footage out, by the way. You didn't even save it for later in the show. You've literally gone early. You can't wait to show people again.
People want to see it, man. People want to see it. Listen. The man could not live with me on the feet, and he decided to take me down. If you want to see a little fella get choked out by a 260-pound piece of Cameroonian beef, here you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm in a bad position. No. Ah, I can't get out of it. I'm glad.
Are you okay?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Are you sure?
No, I'm going. I'm going.
Tell you, mate. Tell you. Honestly, sure? He wanted to hold on to it. He wanted to take the whole head.
That submission defense was absolutely
diabolical.
Horrific.
Nicholas.
Horrific. Kicking your legs in the air like a little turtle isn't how you get any kind of defense going
Nicholas,
there in that situation.
I am fully aware. I am fully aware that I needed to keep the man in my guard, right? To give myself even half a chance. He's 260 pounds. Yeah. If he wants to go over the top of my leg, he's going over the top of my leg, mate. Not a cat in hell's chance. Am I stopping that, son?
I told you when you said you were going down to have a move around with Francis on camera. I said to you then, keep it standing. Don't let him take you down.
I did.
It's going to be too big for you.
I did. He couldn't live with me. My ground game wasn't solid back then.
He says this, everyone. Yeah. No one's ever seen the stand-up portion of that video.
The only bit
of that video that exists is that bit there. Yeah,
listen,
right. Yeah, yeah.
He knew.
Did he know you? Did he? Yeah.
As soon as he got in there, he knew what was happening. And he just went, listen, I'm taking this guy down. I'm not messing about with him on the feet. No chance whatsoever.
That's true. He did stand up with Cyril Gane for 5 rounds and went toe-to-toe with Stipe Miocic.
And then what happened? No, he didn't. Not with Cyril Gane, he didn't. What did he do? He started wrestling him.
With Alistair Overeem as well. He went toe-to-toe with Alistair Overeem. But,
big lad.
You know, 175-pound Adam Catchell was a step too far. Correct.
You know it. Listen, if you are watching the show, thank you very much for joining us on a Tuesday evening. We are live. If you can hit the thumbs up on the video as you're watching. I'm led to believe, thanks to Rob, who was watching yesterday, he tells me that helps the algorithm and that will propel it into the stratosphere for more people to be able to come along and watch the show. So
if you could
do is that, that'd be great. Just hit the button, hit the thumbs up button. Right, here's my first question for you. You ready to get stuck in?
Let's go.
If Francis Ngannou wins on Friday, is it the greatest sporting upset of all time?
Jesus Christ. Is it the greatest sport? No, it isn't.
Do you want me to tell you why I've asked that question? I've asked that question because I've recently watched the Battle of the Baddest Netflix documentary, right? Mm-hmm. And all the conversation, and we're not just talking about one isolated voice, several voices that were connected to that. Now, of course, I know they're selling it and they're trying to pump it up, but a lot of them, including Mike Tyson himself, said this wouldn't just be the biggest upset in boxing. This will be the biggest upset in the whole of sports when you were talking about Francis Ngannou going into Tyson Fury. That's why I'm asking the question now. And if your answer is no, what's changed?
Yeah, well, obviously, I think the man standing across the ring from him, Tyson Fury, is undefeated in boxing and is the, whatever you want to call it, lineal heavyweight champion. Most people would consider him the, still the number one heavyweight on the planet. Even though Usyk's got the majority of the belts, people still put Tyson, myself included, at the very top of the tree. So for a complete and utter novice to come in his first professional fight, of course that even eclipses Buster Douglas's knockout of Mike Tyson. Of course it does. But that would have been the greatest. I think now this situation with AJ, having lost three of his last five or whatever it is, or three of his last six fights, I just think, well, is it still... In boxing terms, would it still be bigger than Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson, which is most people would consider the biggest upset in the history of boxing? Does Ngannou beating Anthony Joshua, knocking Anthony Joshua out, eclipse that? You know what? I don't think it does. I don't think it does because Tyson was, that was the real Mike Tyson. We're talking about Mike Tyson at the back end of his career. That was formidable Tyson, smashing wrecking machine Tyson. And Buster Douglas beat him. So, no, I would say it doesn't eclipse Buster Douglas. And it doesn't eclipse, you know, probably other sporting things either.
All right. Is it bigger than Ruiz beating AJ?
Yes.
What's different then?
I think it is.
Go on.
I think it is. Because Andy Ruiz was a career boxer. Spent his entire life being a boxer. Boxed as an amateur right through his youth. That's his sport. We're talking about a guy in Francis Ngannou. Has never had a professional boxing match up until he fought Tyson Fury. So I think we'd have to, going into that fight with Ruiz, did anyone give Ruiz a chance? Not really. You know, history was against him and everything else in terms of Mexican heavyweight champions or their lack of. Takes the fight at late notice. It's the AJ coming out party in New York. AJ's the unified champion. It absolutely was not supposed to happen. But I watching that, you watching that, people who've watched AJ in this entire run that he's been on, this entire career, could see AJ didn't look right that night. And that can happen to anyone. But I'm not taking anything away from Andy Ruiz. But Andy Ruiz is in there being capable. Okay, he's a bit of a meatball, but he's always had fast hands. He's always been dangerous and speed kills. And if you go in there less than focused, which AJ clearly was, then certainly in the heavyweight division, there's a route to lose. This would be bigger. Ngannou beating AJ, especially AJ in the back of three wins, so you can pick holes in them wins as much as you like. But I and many other people have heard saying this week, this is a resurgent AJ. The magic's back. The Ben Davison effect, even Eddie Hearn earlier today at the open workouts, he was telling every single camera that got put in his face, the Ben Davison effect, believe you me. I was in the changing rooms when he fought Otto Wallen and he was cracking the pads and it was reminiscent of the night when he was preparing to face Klitschko. He's back. He's switched on. So, yes, for Ngannou to knock him out, and I believe he would have to knock him out to win, Fury proves that. I believe that would be a bigger upset than Ruiz, yes.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting the narrative that obviously gets spun in and around fights. The facts are, and you can spin it loads of different ways with Francis Ngannou. And obviously this all comes back to his fantastic story from the sand mines, across the lands, across the deserts, up the mountains, across the seas, into the UFC, becoming the UFC champion. He's defied the odds already. On many occasions, he's already defied a lot of logic that maybe other athletes and other people wouldn't have been able to do. So you kind of take that into consideration when you're talking about this particular moment and think to yourself, well, it's Francis Ngannou. So nothing would really surprise me because it's Francis Ngannou. But factually, when you take a step back and look at paper, he's had one boxing match and he lost it. And he's fighting Olympic gold medalist and former unified two-time heavyweight champion of the world. And yes, we picked holes in it last night. It's all there for you on our YouTube channel. But factually, that's what's facing us, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a good point there made by Rob from UK Boxing. I'd have to fact check that, but I'll go with what Rob's saying here. Ruiz was about 12-1 to beat AJ.
That's correct.
And Ganu's only 11-4 to beat AJ. And I think that is not great odds from the bookmakers. I think it's built on two things, or on numerous things, like I've just said there, is AJ resurgence. He certainly looked it last time out. And Ganu's had one fight, and on paper, at least in reality, I suppose, he lost that fight. But maybe the odds are kind, because if Ngannou's going to win, he's going to knock him out. And if Ngannou catches AJ the way he caught Tyson Fury, I think most of us believe that AJ is going to get wiped out, because Ngannou was very intelligent not to jump on Fury in that third round and their fight at the back end of last year, because Fury's resilience and ability to come back and his incredible chin, he probably would have punched himself out. Probably, we don't know, but probably would have punched himself out. When we've seen AJ get dropped, we've seen him go into distress mode. We've seen him go into panic mode. And if he does that against Ngannou absolutely will spill forward and will start throwing big bombs. So I think that may be why the bookies are thinking, that big, that much power, he only needs to connect once. And if he does connect, that guy's ability to recover isn't anywhere near what Tyson Fury's ability to recover is.
What happens if he wins, Francis Ngannou? What happens if he has his hand raised on Friday night?
Wow. We're speaking purely about Ngannou now, of course.
Yeah, of course, it's an Ngannou show tonight. And like I said,
I think he truly sets himself aside as one of the great crossover athletes in history. You know, we can come back to that in a moment, but I believe that for somebody to dominate in one area and one sport and market and then transition over to another, and to produce a performance like knocking out a former two-time heavyweight champion who still is very much at his peak, I think that would be absolutely phenomenal, especially with the lack of experience. People don't realise, man. You know, Ngannou with the backstory and all that stuff, guy didn't pull on a pair of gloves until he was like 26. That was his first professional MMA fight was at the age of 26, inside the first year of him living in France, living in Paris. Like, it's fucking absolutely insane. In 8 years, he has gone on to try MMA for the first time, go on a run, get signed by the UFC, get into the UFC, become UFC heavyweight champion, and then go, this is not my dream though, kids, so I'm jacking in now. Boxing, let's go. It's absolutely insane that in an 8 year spell, this guy has achieved everything he has. And that is why part of me, being a romantic, but also being around fight sports for a while, sometimes there's just lightning in a bottle. Sometimes the old fight gods are just looking down going, you know what, kid? We're going to let your story play out. And that's what makes this so fascinating on Friday. And Ganu's story is like nothing else we've seen before. This is more sensational than Rocky. More sensational than Rocky. Rocky was a contender, a pug, a loser, a club-level fighter that got the opportunity of a lifetime and went, you know what, this is what I've been waiting for my entire life, and threw everything at it. Francis Ngannou wasn't supposed to be in a boxing ring in Saudi Arabia standing in front of the lineal heavyweight champion of the world on his professional debut, but he made that happen, and it's an absolute storyteller. And if it does play out, it will be the most fierce, you know, true life story ever done by Hollywood. It's insane. It's insane.
It is insane.
Who would play him?
Me.
Not well. You can play you getting choked out. Obviously,
He'd play himself.
He's done everything else. Right. Yeah,
exactly. He's doing everything else. Like, he can't turn to movies and make a Hollywood blockbuster. Of course, he can. Easy work.
I was thinking John Boyega would be able to nail that part. And then I'm thinking, can we bring in, because he's an actor now, he's not a fighter, Conor McGregor to play Tyson Fury, because the size thing. Anyway, regardless.
And Ngannou's playing himself. This is the mad thing about this conversation, because I'm interested when I speak to people about this as to what their interest in fight sports is, first and foremost. Are you purely a boxing person? Are you purely a boxing fan? Are you purely an MMA fan? Do you like a bit of both, right? So we get that conversation going. So when I speak to people that are purely boxing, I find myself having a conversation – agreeing with them, because everything that they say logically makes sense. A guy can't come into the elite level of boxing. It's boxing. We're not street fighting. We're not in Wetherspoons having a roll around on the car park here. This is the sweet science, ladies and gentlemen. And the geezer that's in the other corner is an Olympic gold medalist, and he's a two-time heavyweight champion of the world, right? You're telling me that there's a geezer from a different sport. He's going to come in. He's going to have one fight and lose it. And you're telling me that he can beat that other fella. Now, logically, you sit there and you go, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. What am I talking about? This is nonsense. It's utter nonsense, right? But then you remember it's Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. And in a minute, we're going to get through how he's developed as a martial artist. The failures that he's had along the way in that crazy eight-year period to then become what he became, beating the best heavyweight statistically that the UFC has ever seen. And for him now to put in the performance that he put in against Tyson Fury, it took us all by surprise. All those people that pre-Tyson Fury fight that fancied Francis Ngannou, fancied him because of the power. That's it. You fancied that he might be able to land the power. I didn't think he would be capable of landing that power on Tyson Fury. I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because he turned up and did things that I did not expect of him. He boxed. He didn't go in winging away, just looking to land the power. He was cold. He was calculated. He was cool. He was very, very calm for a debut of that magnitude. And he backed himself. And he nearly pulled it off. I mean, I think he did pull it off. I think he won via the knockdown. I thought it was five rounds apiece and he won on the knockdown. Thought he was very harshly done by. So when we're talking about this situation, you can bring in this boxer or this MMA guy and you can bring them all into this conversation. It's irrelevant when you're talking about Francis Ngannou. He is, with all, this is a kind term, he's a freak of nature. He's a one-off, an absolute one-off. And if we were to be sat here next year and Francis Ngannou was the heavyweight champion of the world, would you be surprised?
Yeah, I would be surprised, obviously.
Would you?
But that doesn't mean I don't think he's capable and I don't think this sport will provide those opportunities. But of course I'd be surprised. Jesus
Christ. Why won't they provide the opportunities? If he beats AJ, he's going to be fighting.
They would. That's what I mean. In that regard, I wouldn't be surprised because the opportunity will come and there's, you know, and anything can happen. With Uncle Turkey holding all the cards at the moment, people are going to get the biggest opportunities, the most eyeball-generating opportunities are the people that are going to, as long as they win, keep getting pushed forward. But I still think it's mental. Just to remove myself from the excitement for the moment of knockout chaos and this fight week, I still think it's mental that a complete and utter novice has taken on a two-time heavyweight champion of the world, former Olympic gold medalist. I still think it's absolutely mental. We have to keep checking back on that to go, what is going on? What is going on? But
I'm going to bring that just on that thought process there. We're going to do that tomorrow on the show, right, of how boxing has changed and what has actually happened here and whether it is, as fight fans, we've just got to accept it because it doesn't make sense.
No.
It does make a bit of a mockery of everything that you've ever known of boxing, that this situation is playing out, but is it a good thing? We'll do that on tomorrow's show, so make sure you come back and join us for it. So if he wins, this is my take on it, if he wins, right, there's absolutely no chance whatsoever that he goes back to MMA. Right, all this talk that they had last week where he's going to be fighting Henan Ferreira in the PFL, not a cat in hell's chance. This is his opportunity. If he beats Anthony Joshua, he's going to be fighting either Tyson Fury again or Alexander Usyk, and it's going to be for the heavyweight championship. There's no way that he's taking his eye off the ball and going back into MMA training, having an MMA fight in the interim period of waiting for his heavyweight title shot. No chance. He's going to stay in a boxing ring. He's going to train in a boxing ring. He's going to continue on this boxing journey until that journey is complete. That's first and foremost. I think MMA loses him if he wins on Friday. I really do. I don't think we'll ever see him fight MMA again if he wins on Friday.
Yeah, I think you're right. But to be totally honest here as well, I can't see any real interest in competition back in MMA for him anyway. So even if he loses on
Well, there's John
Friday,
Jones. If you make the John Jones fight, I'm interested.
How do you make that happen?
I get it. I completely get it.
Easier said than done. Because John Jones has locked down to a UFC contract. Francis Ngannou left the UFC and told he will never come back. He's now a major player within the PFL setup. UFC will not do a co-pro with PFL. That will never happen, regardless of how much money Uncle Turkey may throw on the table. It doesn't matter. So I just can't see that happening. The only way I can see it happening is if Uncle Turkey buys AJ out of his UFC contract. And believe me, even for Uncle Turkey, those would be absolute...
John Jones, you mean?
John Jones. Even for Uncle Turkey, those would be astronomically ridiculous numbers. So I just don't see the challenge there unless there was a way back in with the UFC. And never say never. Listen, never say never at the end of the day. But right here, right now, yeah, I just think if he wins, of course, absolutely no chance. There's no interest whatsoever. And nor should he want to go back to MMA because he's in pole position to fight the winner of Fury versus Usyk. If he loses, that's a different conversation because then we're talking about, I would say, probably a third fight, and it would be third and done if he were to lose it. But I could see it being a comeback fight for Deontay Wilder. That's the only other fight that makes sense. The two biggest punches in, you know, modern times. Can we sell that? I guess we can. You know, Wilder looked all but done. Ngannou would have had 0-2. So I think Wilder versus Ngannou would probably be his last swan song in boxing.
It comes down to the manner, doesn't it? If Anthony Joshua goes out there, schools him 4-5 rounds, beats him up, breaks him down, and then knocks him out, it's over. It's done. This ride, this fairy tale is complete for Francis Ngannou in boxing. And then, yeah, I think he returns to MMA. I personally do not see that happening. I'll give you my prediction on Thursday. I think that that even if Francis Ngannou loses on Friday night, obviously it depends on the manner, but I agree with what you've just said there. If AJ takes him to school and beats him on points, I think a lot of the fan base are still interested in Deontay Wilder, Francis Ngannou. Because of how bad Deontay looked against Joseph Parker,
yeah,
you could still sell it because it's literally just who lands? It's power on power, kids. Who lands? Who wants to see this? And I think a lot of people would still buy into that.
I think so, yeah. I think so. And again, you know, I can see this fight ending one of two ways. Points win for Joshua, quite comfortable. Little bit like, almost a bit McGregor Mayweather-esque, where you're a bit like, oh God, just end it now. This is getting a bit one-sided. But still, I think Ngannou's got a good enough chin and AJ's intelligent enough not to try and roll the dice and quite comfortably. It could be like AJ Ruiz 2, which also took place in Saudi Arabia, where AJ just tries to bore us all to death by picking holes in Big Francis, who will have a sure fall in speed. The flip side of that is Francis Ngannou's tactics. Now, Francis Ngannou blew our minds when he took on Tyson Fury, especially Tyson Fury's mind when he, for me, wins three of the first four rounds, drops Fury in the third round. For me, he wins 7, 8, and 10 as well. So I actually thought Ngannou won at least 6 rounds plus the knockdown. For me, wasn't even close. 96-93 Ngannou all day. And that's being kind on Tyson. But that night, he shocked the world with his tactics, his patient approach, staying on the back foot, allowing Tyson to walk onto shots, allowing Tyson to walk onto left hook, switching orthodox to southpaw. Blew all of our minds. I didn't even know he could do that. Never seen him really do that in UFC. So what the hell? He's been keeping that in his locker to get to this point. It was incredible. And now I think we're all looking forward to Friday going, huh, it's going to be another technical boxing match because that's what Ngannou can do. Ngannou can box, Ngannou can move, Ngannou can switch stances. He's got a great jab. It's going to be another similar performance to Fury. But I think Team Ngannou might just go, let's give them what they thought they were going to get against Fury. Let's smash this guy to bits. Let's go for it. Let's put 3 rounds in the locker and hit this guy with everything but the kitchen sink. And let's see how much he wants it. Because that's the conversation around AJ, isn't it? Does AJ want to be here? Does AJ really want it? Is AJ a two-fighter man? When the going gets tough, it's time to bite down on your gum shield. Is that what AJ's all about? And I think maybe Team Ngannou might be like, let's contest that. Let's see if and what he's about, because we're about that life. Let's see if AJ's about that life. It could be three or four absolutely mental entertaining rounds resulting in a rather brutal knockout, one way or the other.
You've been on to Turkey, I'll shake you, ain't you?
Yeah. Nick, Uncle Turkey's like, come on, lad.
Do me a favour on the live tonight, lad. Sell the living daylights out of this and tell him Big Francis is coming like a truck.
Exactly. It was like, Nick, those open workouts were boring as shit. Do us a favour on the live later. Just mate, sell that orders, our kid.
Mate, do me a favour. Don't refer to anybody hitting pads or anybody getting the local kids in the gym. Don't refer to that. Just talk about two big brutes knocking shit out of each other. Please.
Knockout chaos. We called it that for a reason, Nick. Knockout chaos. Come on.
Yeah. Mate, you've nailed regarding all the things I think that a lot of people were impressed by the first time round when we saw him in a boxing ring against Tyson Fury. His timing was fantastic. He punched when Fury punched.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a key element of this particular fight because we know that he can do that. I think from an AJ point of view, his feet and his feints have got to be red hot. If his feet and his feints aren't red hot, like you've just said there, there could be a whole heap of trouble coming his way on Friday night. He's got a good jab. He looks, do you know something? When he was breathing out of his mouth after two rounds, three rounds against Tyson Fury, I was surprised how well he kept the conditioning.
He rallied.
He just kept going. And like you said, those switches to southpaw were absolutely mind-blowing because we've not seen that in martial arts. Yes, we've seen him mix it up. And this is what I want to get onto regarding Francis Ngannou. His biggest strength, and I know that people are going to say, well, his biggest strength is his power, isn't it? He's going to land that power on somebody. And yeah, okay, from a physical point of view, I understand why people would refer to that. But for me, the biggest strength is what goes on between this lad's ears. That's his biggest strength. Look at all his life, the adversary, everything that he's overcome. Fantastic. What goes on in that lad's head is what sets him apart to every other person that you're ever going to come across. His ability to process defeat, process loss, process things, and develop and get better at a ridiculous speed. You've just mentioned how long he's actually been doing this for. It's crackers. 10 years, man, since he put on a pair of MMA gloves and went to the top there, had a bit of time off with his knee injury and what have you, and now he's back in the boxing world doing what he's doing. If you remember his first ever UFC world title fight against Stipe, he was diabolical. Yeah. He was absolutely diabolical. He looked like a deer caught in the headlights. You're a one-trick pony, son. You've come up against somebody that knows what they're doing, and they've absolutely schooled the living daylights at you. I won't go and recommend anybody to go and watch that fight because it wasn't the best thing ever to watch. And even the fight after that, where he felt a little bit of shot shy against Derek Lewis, again, we all thought, it's gone. It's been found out.
Yeah,
it's gone. But the way that he then addressed the situation, changed his training, changed a lot of things that were going on in his life to get himself back to the top of the tree, truly phenomenal. And if you compare his first fight with Stipe to his second fight with Stipe, completely chalk and cheese, mate, to the point where Stipe looks, what the hell has happened here? This is a completely different human being. In what were it, a two and a half, three-year window that happened? What I'm saying is, I know that it's a shorter period of time, this. He's been out for a long time behind closed doors trying to be a boxer. He got his opportunity under the bright lights against Tyson Fury, and he delivered. Now, I'm on record saying that fight, Tyson Fury was at his worst and Francis Ngannou was at his best. I stand by that, but only at that moment in time.
Correct.
Because Francis Ngannou, Anthony Joshua, is going to fight a better version of Francis Ngannou than Tyson Fury did. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact, and that's based on all the information that he's ever given us from MMA. Every single time he's got better and better and better and better and developed into a guy that took out statistically the best head.
There we go. Go on, you're all right.
But so now he's only going to apply the exact same things in the world of boxing. So I'm pretty confident on Friday we'll get an even better version of Francis Ngannou. The surprise element has gone, granted. But is the surprise element that he's going to do stuff like you've just said, that he's even better than what we saw the first time around?
Even more aggressive is what I'll say. I think he's even more aggressive. You know, there's one of a little post there from a mate of ours, Believe in Bruce, one of the best sports minds in the business.
Bruce knows. He's got the psychology. Go on, Bruce.
But Bruce has put there, AJ's central nervous system is his Achilles heel. He can't take a shot like Fury. Wobbly legs proves this point. And we've seen that repeatedly when AJ gets hit. But we've also seen AJ when the chips are down in certain fights and even outside of fights, speaking to the corner, chatting away to people. Like we've heard this week, it's come to like that a lot of times. He said it to John Fury earlier this week when he bumped into him. And really said, I listen to what you say. And I listen to your criticism of my fighting style all the time. Apparently, AJ has been known to, on his way to the ring, see other trainers and say, would you beat this guy? And while one way you go, well, that's good. He's getting knowledge off a lot of minds to make his own conclusion. But I would also question that if you're saying mid-fight, what did he hit me with? What should I do now? At this stage, when you've been a world champion, when you've been an Olympic gold medalist, that you're still having those doubts in your mind to not be able to read the fighter in front of you, not to be able to get through those, would you call them, crisis moments without a crutch of support from the corner. Those are the alarm bells for me, and those are the sign of someone that isn't psychologically strong. And again, this is the Ngannou show. This is not the AJ show. You've never seen that with Francis Ngannou.
Never.
He takes his L's, he takes his licks, he goes away, he gets better. That's what he's consistently done in the sport of MMA. And getting done on the cards to Tyson Fury, which I believe he did, and I watched it back this morning, believe it or not, and all the commentary team, I watched it on the TNT, then BT replay. They completely had Ngannou winning it by a few rounds as well. Ngannou comes out of that going, right, okay, I understand boxing now. I understand the razzmatazz. I understand a little bit more about the politics, a bit more about the movers and the shakers. And okay, to beat these guys, the judges ain't going to come with me on it. It isn't that world. So maybe I take this world into my own hands. And maybe approach the Fury fight knowing he's fleeing. You can't put him down. You cannot keep this man down. He's just like me. Never been knocked out. Okay, been dropped, but got back to his feet many times. Right, different type of tactic. It's the long game with this guy. Plus, first time in boxing, can I do the 10? All these questions need answers. He answered all those questions, both to us and to himself. Now he comes away going, right, this guy with all the fanfare and all the attention and Eddie clapping behind him and everything else, and woo, this guy changed boxing. This is the guy that's next. Sound. Bring him on, because once I hit him with this, he won't get back up. Fantastic. That's what I've been waiting for. This is my bread and butter, kids. Bring that chin to me. And I think Ngannou's whole persona and attitude on Friday night will be a lot more aggressive and a lot more front foot, power, big shots.
But we have seen that diluted before with Francis, with Cyril Gane. So against Cyril Gane, for those that haven't seen that particular fight, on the feet, Cyril Gane wins the exchanges. And he does it quite comfortably in a way where Francis has to resort to wrestling. He wins the fight, Francis, but he wins it by wrestling. Footwork, feint, speed, lateral movement, didn't trade. You don't get in a firefight with Francis Ngannou. You don't trade with him. You stay on the outside. You keep it long. Now, okay, Cyril Gane's got leg kicks there in order to keep chopping away at that front leg. Anthony Joshua doesn't have that. But he does have speed. And he does have a few different things to all the things that you've just been referring to from the past. When he has looked like he's talking to the corner or he's asking questions and all that type of stuff. He seems to be on the same page as Ben Davidson, as we pointed out yesterday. Mm-hmm. And we're only going to find out once he does get wet, aren't we? We're only going to find out once he does get a whack, how he reacts to it. And if he reacts to that whack like Francis reacted to a takedown attempt from Stipe Miocic, we've got a fight on our hands then, haven't we? Because then what does Francis do? If he thinks in his head, I'm just going to go in there and land on this kid and he's going to go. If he doesn't go, then what does Francis do? Because if it becomes a boxing match, Anthony Joshua will beat him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mate, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. And originally, when you start thinking about it, a boxing novice coming in and fighting the heavyweight, former heavyweight champion of the world, you think this is a circus, man. It's absolutely farcical. But a bit of data that we've been given from the Tyson Fury fight, data that we've got on Anthony Joshua, recent wins, recent losses, all those types of things, the questions that surround this guy constantly. You have on Friday night a fight that has really crossed over into the mainstream, that has captured the imagination of a huge amount of people. Loads of people are talking about it. Loads of people are talking about it. I don't know whether it's because I live in an echo chamber, but yeah, there's loads of people that seem to be interacting with this fight thinking, Francis is going to do this, man. Francis is going to land. Francis is going to knock him out.
Francis has never been stopped, never been dropped, never been knocked out. And that was in 4-ounce gloves. Do we believe AJ can knock him out? Do you think he even can knock him out with the size of the boxing gloves?
Apart from Tyson Fury aside, move that to the one side. Francis hasn't fought somebody that boxes like Anthony Joshua with that speed. Don't get me wrong, there's good strikers in MMA. Of course there has. He's been in with the likes of Alistair Overeem and what have you. But he ain't been in with someone like Anthony Joshua. And if Anthony Joshua gets into range, lets threes, fours and fives go, and can get out without getting too wet, how does Francis Ngannou deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, speed kills. And, you know, I'm part of the... when I was watching the Fury fight back earlier today, as I say, around round five, again, I think Francis dominates the first four rounds. In round five, Fury, it finally sinks in that Fury's like, shit, I'm in a fight here. I'm losing rounds here. I've got to be a little bit more active. I've got to throw a few more punches in bunches. And he starts, he throws a little feint and then he lets a four-punch combo go and every single one of them lands. And it's the first time, really, that he does anything of serious note in the fight. And it's the start of him starting to win a couple of rounds and Ngannou tiring and everything else. But it was the speed of Fury's hands that really caught Ngannou. It wasn't a single. It wasn't, you know, just a straight 1-2. It was a slip and a four-punch combo. A routine that, no doubt, he's drilled on the pads a million times since he was the age of fucking 10. That was just a bam, 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 bam. And Ngannou didn't see the first one coming, which means he didn't see the last one coming. And in that moment, I'm like, if AJ can do that, if AJ can slip that big bomb, that big power jab, and go brah, and unload a big combination, Ngannou's chin will be ultimately tested to the max. Mm-hmm. Tyson Fury wasn't able to do that consistently enough because he wasn't in shape. He wasn't in the kind of conditioning that Anthony Joshua is going to be in on Friday night. Anthony Joshua will have the speed advantage, has absolutely got the skill advantage. But this is not what the fight's about if you're Team Francis Ngannou. Hand on heart, they probably agree with that. They'll probably go, yeah, man. In the technical boxing match, in an amateur boxing match, the old fencing days, we ain't going to touch him. In a speed test, yeah, he's probably quicker than us as well. But we've got a chin and we've got that. And that's what they're bringing to this fight. And that's what the difference is. I honestly think this is for Team Ngannou, this is a 6-round shootout. Let's see if he can survive 6 rounds with us throwing big, accurate bombs from behind a good jab. AJ's going to have to be switched on from the very beginning. Because I think Ngannou's going to come out dripping in sweat, ready to put in on him. Because Ngannou can make a bit of history here, can't he? He can really cement his legacy as one of the greatest crossover sportsmen of all time.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was thinking about this a little earlier on today about crossover athletes, people that have done it in multi-sports. And it is absolutely mental that Francis Ngannou is doing this, and he's got to the top of the tree in mixed martial arts by becoming the UFC heavyweight champion. And now he's got an opportunity of winning on Friday And whatever happens after, if he wins on Friday, whatever happens, you know full well that his next fight is going to be for the heavyweight championship of the world. That in itself is absolutely mad. So when you thought, when you think of the greatest crossover athletes, greatest multi-sport athletes, he's got to be in the comp. Yeah, well, do you know something? I think of the best ones ever, right? And a lot of them are based out of the States. So Coach Prime himself, Deion Sanders. I'm sure anybody that follows NFL will be fully aware of Deion Sanders. He is a man that did it in the NFL. We're talking Super Bowls, but he also played in the World Series baseball. So he used to play NFL games at 2 o'clock and clear off at 6 o'clock to go and play MLB games. A phenomenal, phenomenal athlete at the very, very top level, Deion Sanders, right? You've also got Bo Jackson, who did a very, very similar thing, and a couple of other people as well have done a very, very similar thing. But I would say that Deion Sanders, with him having a Super Bowl win and playing in the World Series final, he's up there as the main person that has crossed over. But anything that I can think of, you just mentioned there, Ian Botham and a couple of everybody that I think of, the majority are in team sports. This dude's on his own. This is just him on his own. Him just strutting in to another sport on his own. He ain't got any teammates to pass the ball to. He ain't got anybody to rely on. It's on him. So if he beats an Olympic gold medalist in that Olympic gold medalist's home sport, when he's only been doing it, what?
3 years.
Two years max? What was it when he beat Cyril Gane? 2 years?
Yeah, two years.
He's been concentrating on it properly for 2 years? Mate, that... I personally think he becomes the greatest multi-sport athlete that we've ever seen.
Historically, there's two names that jump out to me. I know you're a big NFL guy. There's a... Jane's got a... Didrikson. There's a woman called Babe. She was named after Babe Ruth, actually, Babe Didrikson. I remember reading her story one time, and she was in the American Basketball League for women, and she was like a national champion. And then she played, she went to an Olympic Games and won 3 Olympic gold medals in 3 different sports. And before she, and then after the Olympics, she then became a professional golfer and actually set up the women's PGA and is in the Golf Hall of Fame. And get on this, she did all that. So basketball national champion, 3 gold medals from the Olympics, set up golf for women, Babe Didrikson. And she died at 45. She did all that before she passed away at the age of 45. Unbelievable. And there was an American who did something similar in like the 1910s, 1920s, he's an icon called Jim Thorpe. Jim Thorpe got Olympic heptathlon and pentathlon gold. Then he played 6 years in the NFL. Then he played 3 years in the NBA. And then he finished with 2 years in Major League Baseball. So like there's freaks like that who have been on this planet. Don't get me wrong, sport looked very different in those days than it does today, of course. Jim was probably a wealthy character that was able to flip from one thing to another, but still massive. In fight sports, obviously, the one that springs to mind, the obvious one, is Holly Holm. Holly Holm was a kickboxing champion. She then became the best female boxer on the planet. And then that wasn't enough. She moved to the UFC. She knocked out Ronda Rousey, and she crossed over to become UFC champion as well. Yeah. So Holly Holm is definitely like first bride, if you like. But absolutely, Ngannou has got a massive opportunity there.
I've thought of some others whilst you've just been chatting there. Holly Holm, from a fight sports point of view. Alexander Volkanovski.
Rugby league. Yeah, but he didn't really play at a high level, did he? I think it was like B-level.
All right then. Keep your Alexander Volkanovski and go with Anthony Mundine.
Yes, of course. Jesus Christ.
NRL.
He was the highest paid player in the NRL for years. He was like the MVP every year. It's like Patrick Mahomes suddenly going, you know what? I've clocked that now. I'm going to go and become a professional boxer. Fought for a world title as well, Mundine.
Won.
I'm sure he did.
Super middleweight. I don't know whether it was the Fulham, but the WBA super middleweight world title, mate.
There you go. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And
that's a good shout.
I thought of another one. I know that he's not world level, but I'm saying it just because I know that he listens sometimes to our stuff. Curtis Woodhouse. Go on, Curtis, lad. Go on. Play Premier League
Sheffield United captain in the Premier League, and then British title. Unbelievable.
There you go.
But here's another one for you, because anyone in America now, so I'll be flipping out. I'm surprised people aren't in the thing. A lot of people put Mayweather. Nah, man, you know, he came over, he changed sports and picked up $100 million, but he still missed. He didn't win. We're talking about people who succeeded in multi-sport.
Mayweather.
McGregor. Someone's put Conor McGregor there.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Herschel Walker, yeah. NFL legend. Yeah. I don't know if he won a Super Bowl in NFL for well over a decade. He was the college, what's it called when you're the best in college football? Heisman Trophy winner.
Yes.
So he was like a superstar in American football. Then he competed in the American bobsleigh team at the Winter Olympics. And then after that, he went and fought in Strikeforce, which was obviously bought by the UFC. I think he only had two or three fights, but he was undefeated in Strikeforce. So
hey,
Herschel Walker, another absolute sporting freak.
I love this. Listen, if you're watching the show right now, could you just do us a favor? Just hit the thumbs up on the video, right? It helps with the algorithm being sent out to more fight fans. But some of these are belted. Gerwin Price, legendary darts player, used to play a bit of rugby. Of course he did.
Who was the footballer that played for Real Madrid and then he went to Spurs? Oh God, what was his name? He played for Spurs about 10 years. He made his a Dutch player. He was, and he made his darts.
Van der Vaart.
Van der Vaart. He played in a darts tournament as well. I'm sure he had a good win over someone decent as
Mate,
well.
I thought that you were going to be funny then by saying, yeah, he crossed over sports because he went from Real Madrid to Spurs. And that's a completely different sport. No offense to any Spurs fans. Love this. Fred, thank you very much for your message, mate. Alex Pereira. Henry Cejudo. Yep.
Bingo. I think the only thing I would say there is, we'll talk about a fight sport to a fight sport, you know, very similar to home. And yeah, there is a little bit of crossover there. When you're talking about someone that bloody is in the NFL and then is a bobslayer, it's a bit mental.
Yeah. Wayne Rooney, he's on his way to Misfits, isn't he? Wazza?
Yeah.
I reckon he could do a bit. Sonny Bill Williams, mate, they're all coming in now. Brock Lesnar's getting a few shouts here as well.
Brock was a starter. Done two seasons, I think, with Minnesota Vikings, didn't he? And I don't think he was a starter, though. I think UFC was Matt Mitrione. Matt Mitrione was a starter for New York Giants and obviously came to UFC after his injury ruined his career. These are good.
Listen, Ngannou tops the lot, man. If Ngannou wins on Friday and he goes on to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world.
Wow.
In his third fight, being 1-1. Come on, man. He's the greatest multi-sport athlete ever.
You're just saying that because he's choked it out. We'll give him it. Forget Jim Thorpe. He's the guy.
Yeah. Mate, belting. Love that. Thank you very much for getting involved with the program. Still got a few little bits left. So if you're still watching the show, make sure you're hitting the thumbs up on the live. We're going to be live every single day this week, of course. Tomorrow is going to be more of an interactive show where you can get involved. You can have your say. You can come up with the topics. You can say, hey, I was listening to you yesterday and you said this. What do you reckon about this? And that's the type of program that we're going to do. And then on Thursday, we'll have a wrap-up show where we'll give you some predictions, all right?
Oh, yeah. The two cricketers here, Adam Holyoake and Freddie Flintoff, both done boxing. Holyoake was an MMA fighter as well. I only note that because we're not reading them out. I never put them on my list because, as we know, cricket's not a real sport. It's a hobby.
Yes. And we know that Michael Jordan had a go at baseball, but he was rubbish at baseball. That's why rubbish. He went back to basketball and smashed it to bits, didn't he?
And won three more rings.
Oh, mate, as if we forgot that. Well done. Katie Taylor, play for Ireland at football.
At youth level. Come on.
Mate, come on.
And she captained the Irish ladies' first team, fair enough, but she was about 12 when she played for Ireland.
Mate, Usain Bolt played at Soccer Ed.
Go on. Yes, exactly. I'm sure Usain signed for an A-League team down in Australia,
didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, this is mental. Listen, Francis is the man. Stop it with all these that people are now making me second guess myself. Francis is the man, the greatest multi-sport athlete of all time. So just moving away from Knockout Chaos, and we will later on in the week talk about Nick Ball. Yes, we will talk about Zhang and Parker. We'll talk about the rest of the card, of course. What did you make of last week's press conferences and everything that's been going on in and around Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia as they build up towards their fight in April?
Well, obviously, the situation right now with Ryan Garcia, and a few people have been in the comments section have noticed tonight already. And Paul's just done me there.
Ricky Hatton crossing over into ice skating.
Fucking hell. Thanks, Paul. Sorry we missed that one. On a serious note, yeah, just being across his tweets from the last week, whatever. It's hard to know at the moment. Ryan himself put a video message out earlier saying, I'm fine, it's okay. But he didn't kind of like, you know, I've been hacked and I don't know quite what's going on. His ex-wife made a really concerning statement. And we spoke about it earlier in the week, didn't we? Last week it was, when all this was just starting and it hasn't stopped. It's only getting louder. But I'm just a little bit like, I hope he's got good people around him. Do I feel mentally he's in the right place to be taking on Devin Haney right now? No, I don't. But then we said the exact same thing about Teofimo Lopez, and he went and, you know, tied Josh Taylor in knots. Sometimes the best place for him to be, it could be the boxing ring. But yeah, it's a risk, isn't it? Right now. Yeah, with Ryan, it's very scary.
Like you say, obviously we did express those type of concerns when Teofimo Lopez was saying some certain things in the build-up to the Josh Taylor fight, and we thought this should be pulled, and then Teofimo goes and puts a clinic on. So it was quite evident that him being in that ring was the calmest place for him. I don't know Ryan Garcia well enough, but all I'll say is that from an outside view, looking in, it don't look good.
No,
he don't look well. All the signs don't look right, and especially when this is a young man that has cried for help before, and obviously he's gone through big mental challenges before.
Yeah,
last thing you want is him to be walking into a boxing match of this magnitude if he's not right.
Exactly, and I think there's a few comments there dropping in now. You know, at what point does a promoter step in? At what point does the New York State Athletic Commission step in to say, listen, you know, what is going on exactly? Is it, you know, because some people might be alluding to the fact, oh, it's just to tie Devin Haney up in knots. It's what's the difference between this and Muhammad Ali boiling up his blood pressure, you crazy man, and causing chaos, you know, back in the 60s where people then were shocked by his antics. This is just a different form to do it. But do you think Devin Haney gives a flying fuck about Ryan Garcia's tweets? He doesn't care, man. That's not who Devin is. He's ice cold. Mm. I think Devin Haney, especially when people who have been close to him are the ones who are reaching out saying, can someone just check he's all right? That's the situation. That is a rather urgent situation. Unfortunately, his handler remains Oscar De La Hoya as well. And Oscar's got his own issues there. So yeah, hopefully someone at New York State Athletic Commission or somewhere is...
Are you uncomfortable with it? I am.
Yes,
I'll be honest. I'm uncomfortable watching him at the moment. And I know that might just be like that, you know. Oh, here he goes again. Because I said the same thing at Teofimo Lopez and I was wrong. Because Teofimo went in there and did the business. But yeah. I'm looking at that and I feel uncomfortable. I don't want him to fight. I would rather him say, listen, I'm not right. Walk away from it.
Absolutely. Get yourself sorted. Because he's still Ryan Garcia. And we love Ryan Garcia. Because Ryan Garcia doesn't run away from a fight. Ryan Garcia takes on the biggest fights. Ryan Garcia is in the sport for legacy. He's not swerving anyone. He's not ducking anyone. Hence the reason why he's agreed to fight Devin in the aftermath of losing to Tank. He just wants to know, am I the best of this era? Can I become the best of this era? What are the biggest fights possible of this era? That's all fantastic and absolutely commendable. But if something's not right between his ears, he needs to be protected. Because if you're the worst place you can possibly be, if you've got some issues with your mental health, is standing in a boxing ring or standing in a cage, especially with someone as capable of Devin Haney. You know, I think back to the Oliver McCall moments. Would Oliver McCall in a rematch with Lennox, would his mental state have been flagged sooner had he been on social media for a month leading up to the fight, saying the kind of things which Ryan Garcia is saying? Back then, it was a case of turns up fight night. Well, it doesn't matter whether he's crying or not. He's fit to fight. He's capable. He looks all right. Get him in there. And then he has an emotional breakdown inside the ring. Fortunately enough, Lennox looked as bamboozled as anybody, and I'm pretty sure it was Miles Lane that eventually just went, "Nah, man, this is done." But I just think right now, I feel like I'd be very surprised if Ryan Garcia gets in that ring to face Devin Haney on that scheduled date.
Yeah, we'll keep across it, and if there's any news, of course, we'll get it on Fight Disciples for you. But it seems to be playing out publicly as well, which is never ever a good thing, isn't it?
Nah.
Final one. We've got a couple of minutes before we clear off for the evening and let these good people get on with the rest of the night. I'm sure it's not passed you by, this the Dillian White story.
Mm-hmm.
An investigation. And again, this is weird, right? Because there's no, I don't know about you, I don't know whether you've come across it, so correct me if I'm wrong here. I haven't seen any official voices or anything like that. I've seen Sky Sports put something out on their website. I've seen other people piggybacking off the back of that. So that's the only information I've got. I haven't spoken to Dillian. I haven't spoken to any of his team. I haven't delved deep enough into the situation. All we know is that in the build-up to the fight with Anthony Joshua, which was scheduled last year, of which Robert Hellenius came in as a last-minute opponent, he returned an adverse finding via VADA for the Anthony Joshua fight. And it's been silence since. And this week, I saw an article come out from Sky Sports, which says that an investigation has found that a contaminated substance is the reason for the adverse finding via VADA for the Anthony Joshua fight. I'm also led to believe, from reading that article further, like I said, I've not spoken to Dillian, so I don't know from the horse's mouth. I haven't spoken to anybody at the board. I haven't spoken to any of his promotional team or anything like that. But I'm led to believe that he is seeking loss of earnings, damage to reputation,
good
cost of the investigation, all that type of stuff, with the supplement company that has obviously put back this contaminated substance. And what that basically means is that he's taken a supplement, and the ingredient that he's been done for isn't listed on the supplement,
mm-hmm.
hence it being contaminated. That article also goes on to say, listen, fully comprehended with everything that was asked of me. I was giving me toothpaste in, me shampoos in, me supplements, and we're writing lists of food and all this type of stuff. And we've found that this information this week. Like I said, none of that's official. That's not come from the British Boxing Board of Control or anything like that. The article states that I didn't even know that Dillian was licensed by Texas. So it says that it's the Texas State Athletic Commission that are giving him the thumbs up to continue with his career. State Athletic mm-hmm. Commissions. Obviously, they can license people, but you need official wording as to, like, from voluntary antidote. I know that VADA do the test and then they pass that on, don't they? But you need to hear from the British Boxing Board of Control, because I'm assuming, again, I need to do more research in this, so I apologise to people. Normally, I'm far better prepared than this. But when you... The sanctioning body for the AJ fight would have been the British Boxing Board of Control. So I think we need to hear from Robert Smith, the British Boxing Board of Control, regarding the actual situation in regard to Dillian White going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll listen. How unlucky can one guy be? You know what I'm saying? This is the third time he's failed the test now. And now it seems like this third time, there's an absolutely perfectly logical reason. And Dillian insists that he's been completely exonerated and cleared because he provided a supplement that had an ingredient that wasn't listed on it. I was the same as you when I read it. That's what it alludes to being. And I'm like, wow, how unlucky could one guy be? You've had two failed tests and you've saved two punishments already in your fight and life. One as a kickboxer and one previously in boxing. And here you are with a third failed test. And it just so happens that it's a contaminated supplement. It's all very fishy. Of course it is. And I think you'd be wrong to not kind of go, come on. I'd like to hear from the board. I'd like to hear from VAR. I'd like to hear some.
Well, there's nothing official. Situation. And this is it. Like, for example, right? We just had a message here from Kieran, right? Read that. Are you going to have the same energy that you had with Conor Benn? Yes. Yes.
We haven't heard from anyone yet.
We haven't heard it. Everything that we ever said about the Conor Benn situation was factually true.
Yeah.
Cast iron. Because we spoke to people along the way, dotted I's, crossed T's, and gave you the timeline. And we still haven't had a resolution to that. We're led to believe that it's coming out. Well, it was supposed to come out in February, weren't it? Where we were supposed to get a resolution to that situation. Still hasn't come out. And I'm sure that is annoying everybody that's involved. It's most certainly annoying the boxing public. This is an... what annoys me is this, right? Is that there is no... When people use the word clear, when people use those types of phrases, it confuses the audience. It confuses the boxing landscape. Nobody officially, as I've seen, and I will, and listen, if I'm wrong, I will stand corrected. Nobody officially has cleared Dillian White. We've seen an article that Sky Sports have put out, and they say that they have seen something from an official doctor or something like that, that gives their expert's opinion that it's a tainted supplement as to why he failed that test in the build-up to the Anthony Joshua fight. Nothing official as of yet. So we're just highlighting it because other people are now talking about it as he's cleared and he can crack on. Is that official or is that just the words of PR? What is that? We don't know. What I will say is this, just on this moment, I just wanted to bring up Yoel Romero, because for those that do follow MMA, I'm sure you're fully aware of this story. Yoel Romero was in the UFC. And what the UFC have, they have supplements that are given a stamp, let's just say, of which fighters can then use. So the UFC work with supplement companies, and if they pass their tests, then everything clean and above board, you get the gold stamp, and then fighters are allowed to crack on. Yoel Romero used one of those affiliated supplements and popped hot. And it turned out that it was a tainted supplement.
He
sued that company for $27 million. It was reduced, I know, to, I think it was reduced about 12 and a half, but still, for damages, loss of earnings, think of how much, if everything is above board, everything that you're being told about this situation, if it's above board and true, Dillian White should be getting an absolute fortune. He missed out on an Anthony Joshua payday because of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So let's see how that plays out. I will wait for the British Boxing Border Control to make an official statement.
Yeah, I just had a quick look then. You know, it's not just Sky Sports. A lot of outlets have picked it up, but they're alluding.
But they're all referring back to Sky Sports. They're all referring back to the same article. That's bad journalism, isn't it?
Dillian White said, and Dillian White saying. Yeah, exactly. Well, they're all using the keyword reportedly, rather than actually doing some fucking reporting and picking up a phone and moving the story forward.
Of which I will do this week. There you go. So maybe by Thursday we'll have some better answers for you on that. But I just wanted to highlight it because a few people mentioned it on the show yesterday and they wanted to talk about it. Anyway, thank you very much for tuning in to our live stream. Second one of the week. We're going to have another one lined up for you tomorrow where you're going to be involved.
You're
going to kick back, man.
Come and join us. Come on.
I'm going to kick back, put my feet up, listen to what you've got to say, probably take a bollocking off a few of you, and then... we'll have an hour's worth of fun. Get your thoughts on AJ Ngannou. Get your thoughts on Zhang Parker. Get your thoughts on Nick Ball and whether he's going to get on the inside of Ray Vargas and do him and become the WBC champion. Who knows, man? It's all set to be something quite special on Friday night. We want you to get involved with tomorrow night's show. So if that tickles your fancy, leave a little comment. Get involved with us on social media and we'll get in contact with you tomorrow and hook you up with the link so you can come and join us on the programme. All right, very simple. And then on Thursday, we'll have a prediction show where we'll tell you how we think that this is going to play out. I think you kind of know where our heads are at, but we're going to go there anyway on Thursday. So make sure you come and join us for it. There you go. Well done, Nick. Technology worked. Everything was sweet. All good, man, eh? Anyway, thank you very much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. Fight Disciples.